Russia rejects war crime claims over bombing of Syria's health facilities. We join on the line by journalist, documentary filmmaker, live from northern Syria, Bilal Abdul Karim. Bilal, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How is everybody in Johannesburg and beyond?
All are well on the side of the world. We're concerned about your own well-being, being so close to the bombing. You've been a witness to the tragedies in Syria. Tell us more about what's happening on your side.
Well, I think it's becoming clearer to those who it wasn't clear to before that these are not attacks that are against ISIS or anything like that. These are attempts to hand the country back over to the regime by Russian forces and other than them that are all allied with Bashar al-Assad. Because how can we really explain bombings of several hospitals? How do we reconcile that? How do we understand that? Except to inflict maximum casualties, but this is something we've been seeing for the past 5 years.
Yes, it has been an ongoing trend, as you outline. Can you perhaps tell us more about the Russian bombing of the MSF hospital?
Well, one of the issues is that bombing a hospital is bad enough, but when four hospitals in different areas around the country were bombed in a double tap type fashion, this has got to tell you a lot about what this situation, this struggle really is. And I think that South Africans can relate to the similitude I'm going to bring here. In 1994, the Hutus killed nearly 800,000 Tutsis in Rwanda. So I'd like to ask the people, do you think that there could have been real negotiations with the Hutu extremists at that time when they were carrying out the genocide? It's extremely unlikely. So when we're in a situation like we're in here in Syria, wherein there was a huge shortage of doctors and medical professionals, and then they continue to hit these medical facilities, killing more doctors, what more does the international community really need to see?
Absolutely. Now, interesting word that you referred to while describing that attack. You said a double tap. What does that mean?
Okay, a double tap basically is there will be an airstrike, like what happened yesterday. Approximately 9:10 in the morning, there was an airstrike. And it hit the building straight on. Now, immediately what happens is that people then come running to the site to try their best to pull out survivors and to bring the injured to whatever hospitals are or medical facilities which are nearby. And approximately 10 minutes later, then you get the second hit. Now, the second hit is designed to inflict maximum casualties because whoever was not caught in the initial blast and was in the area and they rush over to pull out survivors, then they get hit with the second blast. So usually the second blast causes at least as many casualties as the first one because people come to pull out the survivors. But this is not unique to what happened yesterday. We've seen this happen on, and I'm choosing my words carefully here, countless times. And this is what continues to happen. But yet we continue to hear that there should be negotiations and things of this nature. I don't think that there are any credible partners for negotiations on this side.
Yes, now, you know, as you describe it, and the deliberate and the intent is clearly visible, but on the other hand, you have Russia Today journalists on the station saying that Russia did not bomb civilians, you on the ground, so it's just lies that they are promoting.
Well, if you look at RT, Russia Today, I watched a program just about 2 days ago, wherein it was the presenter was saying how Russia has come to stabilize and has stabilized Syria. And I just got this weird sensation. It's like, well, what planet is he actually on? There isn't a single Syrian here who would share a view like that, that Russia has stabilized Syria. Now I know that it's a real stretch to say 100% of the people here in these liberated territories would share that view, but I'd say we'd be pushing it if we said it was 98%. Nobody here in these territories believes that Russia is stabilizing Syria.
Absolutely. You interviewed Ahrar, military commander in Aleppo, Syria, regarding recent events. What did he say?
Well, I interviewed him directly after the attacks that took place in Hariatan and Kafr Hamra and those neighboring villages, which were right outside of Kafr Nubul and I forgot the second village. So basically, he was making mention that yes, territory was lost, and that the fighters were gearing up for a counteroffensive, and that's pretty much what's been going on here over the past week. So there have been counteroffensives and such like that. However, I think the reality of the situation is that when the rebels are facing the onslaught of the Russian bombardment, the droves of fighters which have come from Lebanon and have come from Iran, one can easily understand why they've made a call to the international Muslim community to come to help them to defend the Syrian people.
And the call not being heeded in the way that they would have expected. Ahrar and Jabhat al-Nusra aren't in the Geneva as part of the Syrian peace talks. If they're not on board, can talks in Geneva really succeed?
Okay, just before I answer that question, I just want to go back to something that you made mention of. Now, when they made that call, the issue wasn't so much that they didn't get the response that they expected. I think it's just the opposite. People have been coming, even now, that they do come and they do contribute whatever they can contribute. If they're professional people, then the groups have found ways to put them in their fields as best they are able to. If they're teachers, if they're doctors, if they work in the waterworks profession. So they've been able to utilize the people, particularly professionals and other than them, that have been coming. But they didn't have any delusions of grandeur. I think that there was an overwhelming feeling that much of the Muslim Ummah is sound asleep. So it's not realistic that they'll make a call on Monday and the flights to Turkey will be full on Tuesday. So I think there's a bit of realism that's there. Now, as for your question, you made mention that Jabhat al-Nusra and Ahrar al-Sham were not in Geneva. Well, here are the realities. Two of the biggest groups fighting in northern Syria are Jabhat al-Nusra and Ahrar al-Sham. Now, whoever may or may not like that, that's the reality. So if you're going to have a peace process, that when I spoke to Labib Nahas, who is one of the chief negotiators for Ahrar al-Sham, and he was told about this Munich agreement, he said, I just found out about it this morning on the news. Come on, what type of peace process are we really pushing forward when none of the power brokers on this side were actually there, on the side of the rebels were actually there? It's not realistic. That's like I'm trying to broker a ceasefire between a man and his wife, and neither the man or the wife are actually present for the discussion. It's not for real.
Absolutely absurd. In terms of your own personal experience, how close have you really come to bombs falling, Bilal?
There were two occasions, three occasions, where the bombs landed very, very close. One of them was just about a month and a half ago, when I filmed the courthouse that was bombed in Idlib. I was actually filming about 50 to 75 meters away. And the first blast landed, And when the first blast landed, of course, we ran over both to film and to help to pull out survivors. I mean, at the end of the day, we might be doctors, lawyers, or even journalists. But when we see people in pools of blood underneath concrete, we have to go and we have to try to help them. So when I went over, we heard the planes. This is about 10 minutes into it. We heard the planes again for the second tap. That's the double tap that I make mention of. And when they hit, everybody just gets down on the ground and you just hope for the best. And then you can, when those missiles land, you can feel the blast wave. So you're just hoping, the only thing that you say is La ilaha illallah. So when you say that, whatever happens after that, khalas, it's just going to be a good thing, or it's not going to be a good thing, because there's nothing you can do about it at that point. So it was, that was the most recent a time that I was close to the blast. And of course you get peppered with shrapnel. You just hope that there's nothing that's big enough that's going to go through you or go into you. And you know, there have been times when I got shot and, you know, other things, but that's just part of what it is here.
Subhanallah. You know, listening to the brave account from yourself as we go into the Maghrib time in South Africa, our du'as are really with you. Continue doing the great work. We really depend on journalists like yourself to bring us first-hand accounts on what's happening on the ground. Our prayers are with you, Bilal, and we look forward to touching base and speaking to you once again in the future.
Okay, thank you. And salam to all of the brothers and sisters and everybody there in South Africa.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.